leadership requires no title.
It doesn't matter where you are on the depth chart or on the organizational chart, you showing up with excellence every day matters and makes an impact. It's not fun to have to talk about a way that you failed over and over again. But Damon, the message I share with sports teams, with companies that I speak to, is that...
Have you ever taken the tougher road because it was the right choice to make? Well, our guest today has done just that, and he'll be sharing with us why integrity under pressure isn't just a bold move, it's actually the secret to building powerful and long-lasting leadership success. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm a two-time best-selling author, and I'm the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. In a moment, Alex Demchek will be joining us, and I'll be asking Alex to share his experience in college football and how it helped transform his life. Integrity as a leadership foundation, practical steps to building trust as a leader, and much, much more. Take us back to your time at Mizzou, and I'm referring to your junior year.
Yeah, man, I grew up loving sports. I was a sports fanatic. I remember my grandpa when I was in high school, he said, "Son, I was so serious when I was in high school, I didn't even date girls during football season." And I remember saying, "Grandpa, I want to be like you," you know? So I remember dating one girl my freshman year. She was cute. But other than that, I was pretty focused.
Girls are bad for the batting average, man. They're bad for the batting average.
Yeah, Rocky Balboa, he's like, they'll make your knees weak. So, you know, you got to, you know, apply those principles. But anyway, fast forward to college. I had the chance to walk on at the University of Missouri. And my first 2 years on the team, my freshman and sophomore year, life was good. I really had no complaints. It, you know, as you know, playing at that level, it's pretty fun. You're part of just a really cool thing happening. I invested everything into that program, blood, sweat, and tears. And going into my junior season, you have an annual, just a really easy, chill meeting with an assistant coach, right? And so I walked into this meeting room where it was normally no big deal. And as I walk into the room, instead of one coach being there, there was three. So that was different. And I sit down at the table. And as I'm sitting down, one of the coaches is actually closing the door behind him. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed here, but this is not a good start, right, to the meeting. And I sit down and the coach looks right across the table from me. And he said, "Alex, I want to shoot you straight. We have over scholarshiped at quarterback. We are bringing in someone to take your spot."
Wow.
And yeah, he just like said it just totally directly like that. And it was kind of just silent in the room. I guess I was just like internally processing what's happening. And he said, "Alex, you have two options. Option number one is you're cut from the team." And in my mind, I'm thinking, is that really an option? And he said, "Option number two is you can stay on as a volunteer assistant coach, like no pay, but we could use you." And he's like, "By the way, you need to decide, you know, right now what you want to do." And so, Damon, as you can imagine, I'm sitting there, my mind's racing, right? I'm like, what? I've given my life to this thing, football, all of it. I've done right by the program, done everything right. And now this is what's being told to me. And so in that moment, I didn't even know really what to say, but I had all my great friends on the team. I'd put so much time and, you know, into it. And so I just said, "I guess I'll be an assistant coach," whatever that even means. And so they all stood up almost the same time. They shook my hand. They walked me out of the room. It was like a business deal, right? Felt really weird. I'm in the hallway. I walk past the quarterback who took my spot. I knew who he was. He's obviously happy. I'm not. I'm defeated. And I remember walking out to my truck and just crying and just feeling so humiliated, feeling so let down. Like I not only let down myself, but my family who had helped me go to college and for all the different elements. I was just feeling like, oh my gosh, like how this is where my story ends.
That was about what, 10, 11 years ago?
That was about 10 years, probably 11 years ago. That's great math. Yeah, 11 years.
A lot of our listeners are sports fans. So now things are kind of different in sports with NIL. Do you think you would have done it differently now? Do you think you would have went into the transfer portal?
That's a great point. Because yeah, back in the day, if you transferred, you had to like, what, sit out a year? It was just kind of, now it's kind of like, yeah, if my situation happened today, it probably would have looked a lot differently because, you know, me, I'm kind of like you where I'm wired for building businesses and stuff and being a walk-on, I probably would have figured out, okay, how can I start some business while I'm on the team, you know, like, so maybe I would have had something going there. But yeah, man, you're right. With the NIL, the wild, wild west of the transfer portal now, this whole story would have been a lot different. But back then, it was way bigger of a decision to transfer. You know, there was more like loyalty to like your coaches and the impact they had on you. Right now, these days, it's like these five-star recruits show up and their parents say, all right, well, how much are you going to pay my son? And that's how they do the recruiting process.
It was so much similar for me. I hit a home run in the College World Series. The next day was the baseball draft. I didn't get picked up. All my friends around me did. And similar to you walking through that parking lot, it was kind of devastating, you know? So how did it go from there?
Yeah, man, that's a great point. And it's I definitely didn't even hit a home run or score a touchdown. So you're way better of an athlete than I am. But yeah, man, I think you just hit it on the head of just your sports or anything you do, it can become just your identity. It's more of, you know, who you are rather than what you do. And so when I had a bad practice, well, now my whole night's ruined. And so there was definitely some probably unhealthy patterns there that I had to learn. But yeah, as I go out to the car, I'm crying. There's a few weeks before the first practice. I have this thought in my mind, you know, well, coaches make a lot of money. You know, Nick Saban at Alabama, he's making $8 million a year. Maybe I'll go into coaching. It'll be all good, right? And the first day I show up to practice, I walk in, I'm thinking, you know what, they're going to give me this big coaching role. They're going to give me, you know, all these, just, they're going to give me the nice Nikes, the nice swag, you know, as you know, you got some of that stuff. And I walk in, one of the assistant coaches, he says, hey, Alex, I want to show you what your job's going to be. And he hands, and for your listeners, he hands me this yellow flag. He gives me this yellow flag. It's like a referee flag. And he says, Alex, I want you to take this flag. And in practice, when someone jumps off sides, you're going to take the flag and you're going to throw it down. Like he literally just like threw it in front of him. And Damon, the worst part about the whole deal is he like demonstrated how to do that twice. And
I mean, was he being serious or was he just being a jerk?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Looking back, haven't talked to the guy since, and it's been a decade. So I don't know. But I mean, he's just kind of just showing me how to do this. And I'm like, okay, I think I can handle this. And so I'm asking him questions like, okay, do you want me to do this at the beginning of practice, the end, what part of practice? He's like, no. Like, we need you to do this the entire practice, like all season. This is what we need you to do. And so David, literally like my junior season, I went from being an SEC quarterback. When I do a speaking engagement, I show it to the audience. This was me as an SEC quarterback to now being this flag thrower, which isn't even a real job title or position, right? And so my entire junior season, I'm making copies for the coaches. I have to now make the quarterback who took my spot look good in practice. Like I have to do all these things that I'm just like, what am I, why am I here? What am I doing? But I'll say this, Damon, during that junior season, I to this day can still remember the guys who would give me little encouragements saying things like, hey man, I see you. I stick with it. Keep going, man. Hey, I would have transferred. It's cool that you stuck with it. Like those little things people would say to me, it just got me through the next day or the next week. And it's those little things that people do for you. And I just haven't forgotten a decade later. And that junior season, just the sheer humility of being brought so low, it just forged relationships in my life with some of those players that I don't think would have ever happened if it wasn't for this. Because now all of a sudden I'm on the sidelines with holding a flag, right? And so when someone's injured on the sideline, now I actually have time to ask that person, hey man, how are you doing? I didn't make time. I didn't have margin for that previously. I was trying to do my own thing. And my entire junior season, I knew I had 1 year of eligibility left. So I continued to work out with the team. I'm in my street clothes running after practice with the other quarterbacks. Felt stupid, to be honest. Like I felt dumb. Like, what? Why am I doing this? Like, should I keep doing this? Should I go to McDonald's, work at McDonald's and get a job and make money or, you know, so whatever. And long story short, as I continued to show up every single day, my senior year, I got back on the team as a quarterback. We went to the Citrus Bowl. It was like a really cool, I guess, like finality to my career. But Damon, the message I share with sports teams, with companies that I speak to is that, you know, when I look back at my career of all my years as a player, but then I look back at the 1 year that I threw that darn flag, I made a way bigger impact that year than all my other years as a player. And Damon, I don't even know if I'd be on this podcast with you today if it wasn't for me throwing that darn flag and going through this trial in my life, because it changed me. And it forced me to eventually, when I did start sharing my story, because at first it was awkward. I'm like, I got cut from the team, like not the best pickup line to use in college, right? You know, it's like not, it's not fun to have to talk about a way that you failed over and over again. But as I realized, I started leaning into my story and being vulnerable, like, hey, this is what happened to me. Well, then I noticed other people would resonate with that. And the message I share all over the country is that, you know, it might not work out the way that you planned it out, but you just never know how you can be used. And kind of the tagline that I say is that leadership requires no title. It doesn't matter where you are on the depth chart or in the organizational chart, you showing up with excellence every day matters and it makes an impact. And for me, it kind of changed my life because I don't know what I'd be doing today if it wasn't for that. But that trial, rather than letting it, I didn't do it perfectly, but rather than letting it define me, it really did refine me. And looking back, I'm grateful for it. In the moment, though, I wasn't. In the moment, I'm thinking, why me? Oh, this is terrible. But I can look back now a decade later and say, I'm glad I went through that because I get to be ultimately on your podcast today. That's what I'm most grateful for. Oh,
first of all, I got to say, I really admire you because I was in a similar situation as well. And I got hurt, but I quit. I gave up. I left. You know, I made it somewhere else, ended up at Arizona State. But in that moment, let's just stay there for a second. How did you have this inner strength to stick with it?
That's good, man. I think for me, relationships were huge, but also mentors in my life. I think about, you know, Fellowship of Christian Athletes here on campus. There was a guy named Nathan who really just took the time to invest in me. He said, Alex, you're more important than just your jersey. Just, you know, there's more to you than just playing this game of football. And as a junior in college, it was hard for me to like realize that, but it took an older man who had four kids and he's in his 40s to tell me, look, you have other things you're going to accomplish in your life. Football's not everything. And so I think that was super helpful. You know, parents, family, just my faith and just being supported, I think was huge because if it wasn't for some of those things, some of those foundational pieces, I would be having a complete identity crisis. I did for a few weeks probably of like, what? Like this new paradigm's insane. But that is my encouragement, Damon, is to high schoolers and college students. It's like, you need to have a foundation in your life that's unshakable. Because if you put all your hope and all these things into making money or to as an athlete or how many likes you on Instagram, like those things can go away pretty easily. And you need to be prepared for that. And so I think for me, man, it's just something that's more foundational than just, okay, I'm this SEC quarterback and that's I'm gonna try to be someone that I'm not. It's like, no, that it was taken away from me in the blink of an eye. And so I think, man, that was a huge lesson learned. But it was not easy. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was easy because I'm a competitive guy like you. And so that was very hard to accept the decision that was made, but I had to learn, okay, I can either complain and talk about why that quarterback's not good, or I can just accept what has happened. And I'm going to find ways to get better and find ways to add value every day. So if that means I'm printing off copies for the coaches, which felt so dumb to me at the time, it's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put them on the table exactly how they want them. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to shut my mouth and I'm going to show up and continue to add value. And if I wouldn't have done those things, I don't know if I would have got another chance to be back on the team my senior year. I don't know. I don't know if they would have, you know, I don't know the behind the scenes conversations that happened on that. But I do know that I believe those played a factor in sticking with it and saying, look, I'm committed. I believe in what we're doing here. But it was hard. It was hard in the moment.
What I'm hearing is that you grew up, you know, and sports was your identity, especially at this point, being a college quarterback. Then you realize when that was taken away, you needed to shift your mindset away from, you know, I'm more than just a college quarterback. I have this foundation. I'm going to be somebody different. Things will change over time. So what advice do you have for individuals? Let's say somebody who spent 15 years as an accountant, and they got let go from their job. They've always identified as an accountant, but maybe they want to try something new in their career. How do they step out of their comfort zone and make that change?
Yeah, that's really good. And I'll even use a story from my own life to answer that. So fast forward, once I got done with college athletics and moved on, graduated, I was in corporate sales for about almost 5 years. And so I was doing sales, you know, at a cubicle, doing the work. And that's around the time that I met John Gordon, my co-author now with The Sale. And so I started doing speaking engagements. So I would I would be at the cubicle doing my stuff, and then I would go speak at some other company on leadership, and then I'd go back to the cubicle, right? So it was kind of like I was living these two worlds, and I did this for about 3 or 4 years, and I was doing speaking really as a side hustle. And so for me, you know, my wife was a first grade teacher, and as we were considering, like, all right, what do I see myself doing long term? Like, at that time, I was in the mortgage industry, so I was, you know, working with a mentor. I'm like, he's asking me, okay, 30 years from now, do you want to be doing mortgages? And that's a great career for a lot of people. But for me and the way I'm wired, my answer to that question was no. So he's like, all right, well, then let's start working with that. What do you want to do? I said, well, I want to write books and speak. And so that's where that started to happen. So it's like, I guess my encouragement to people would be, you almost have to reverse engineer it. You almost have to think, I had a speaking engagement 3 nights ago. And I said, what would it look like at your retirement party? You know, to be able to be around friends, family, coworkers, people that saw you do it in a way that helped others, that added value, and that you actually love every day. Maybe there's hard days, but you love the work that you got to do. You love the impact. Like, that'll be pretty fulfilling, rather than getting to that end of it and this retirement party, and you're like, man, I really hated my job. I did something for, the average person works 90,000 hours at their job, or 1/3 of their life.
Wow.
And so, like, as a millennial, you know, or even, you know, younger generation, Gen Z, like, the biggest fear for our generations is, like, you do something and you're not passionate about it and you don't care about it. And so I think that would be my message to that person is, yeah, I mean, maybe you do get let go from the accounting firm, but what are the unique giftings you have? What are the things that in that accounting role that you learned that, hey, guess what? Maybe you can open up your own CPA firm, or you can do your own bookkeeping business, you know? And so I just think it's I think a lot of people, here's the thing. Life is so busy. We got social media, we got news, we have all these things going on. Most people don't take the hard work, and they don't take the time to really figure out what they really want in life, you know? And so I think it's when you go on a retreat, you take the day off work to just say, you know what, I'm going to go in the woods and I'm going to take a notepad, or I'm going to walk around my block. I'm not going to check my phone. I'm going to actually just think about 10 years from now, what do I want to do? You know, an exercise that I love having people do is if you found out that you just inherited $1 billion, okay, $1 billion, obviously we would all upgrade certain areas of our lives. You know, I have a 2009 Honda CRV, and it has like a dent from a deer, and it actually has the deer hair sticking out of it. I'm like, you know what? I'm pretty proud of that. The deer survived, of course, but I'm like, you know, this Honda is a beast. And so if I got $1 billion, I would obviously upgrade, right? I would get them some nicer vehicles. That's obvious. But from a non-monetary sense, is there anything you would change about your life if you had all this money, didn't have to worry about money? And I think when you ask questions like that, you start to discover, ooh, these are some of my interests, my passions, think causes I want to be involved with. But if you don't take the time to investigate, it would be sad to get to the end of your career, the end of your life, and say, wow, I never even took the time to, I just like got up in the morning, checked my phone, looked at social media, and did other people's priorities all day. Like, that sounds kind of miserable to me. And so I think that would be my encouragement is, what are the unique giftings that you have that you can bring to the world? Because the reality is, someone out there needs it, or maybe a lot of people need it, you know? And I think when you think of it that way, it kind of starts to shift your mindset for your future.
I really like what you're saying there. It's, first of all, say you're an accountant or you're an athlete, the skills that you picked up, I heard you say, they are transferable. They can be transferred into doing something in a different career. And what you're talking about, self-reflection and thinking about, okay, what do I really want to do with my life? And 15, 20 years from now, do I want to say I passed up these great opportunities because I didn't even take a chance? You know, so I think that's wonderful advice. Now, moving on to Alex's book. In Alex's book, The Sale, integrity is really the key central message. So, Alex, where did you first learn the importance of integrity in your own life? And why do you think that it's such foundational for leadership? I mean, especially in today's world.
It's a great question. And I think to your point about today's world, I think it's kind of something that it's not talked about a lot because we're all conditioned to, like, if we all looked at the ESPN ticker right now, I bet there would be a story we could find right now, live on this podcast, that would have to deal with an integrity issue of a player.
Of course.
Of course, right? And so I think we're so used to that. And it's kind of rare to be around leaders that do it in a way that is opposite of that. And so I think my co-author, John Gordon, and I, why we chose this topic is because when you look at leaders that have lasted for the long haul, and you really start to dig into their life and some of the things that they do and the accountability they have in place or the coaching or the mentoring, you start to unpack like, wow, this person is navigating at a very high level, but they're doing it with integrity. And, you know, the root word of integrity is the word integer. So, you know, it means a whole or complete number, right? And so when you're around a fully integrated leader, I mean, that's someone who it's attractive to be around that person. You're attracted to their personality. You want to do work with them. You want to do business with them. You want to be in a relationship with them. That's a person who they don't just, you know, they don't just talk the talk, but they walk the walk. And I think, Damon, when we see it, we know it, right? Like when I've been in Clemson football's locker room, been around Dabo Sweeney, the guy is unbelievable. And when you're around someone like that, you can just sense it. And I think that is the encouragement, you know, for the book of the sale is it's a story about a guy named Matt, and he has these, I don't know how much you want me to go into the book here.
Go
ahead,
do it. Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the book.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Hey, appreciate your endorsement. It means a lot, but, so Matt is the type of guy that he's very successful, makes a lot of money. But at home, you know, things are not so hot, not so good. His wife, Kendra, she actually tells him, look, I'm raising these two kids alone. You're never
divorce
home. Him. Yeah, and exactly. She ultimately says, look, if you don't change, like, we're getting a divorce, right? And she says, I need you to provide. And his response to her is pretty arrogant. He says, provide? He says, I make more money in 1 month than the average person does in a year. Who are you telling to provide, right? That's his response. And so things at home are not good, but at work, as you read about, things start getting better and better. And he's in the aviation sales industry, very lucrative industry, and he gets the chance to make the sale of the lifetime. This sale would bring in $72 million of revenue for his organization, which is a lot. I mean, I don't know about you, Damon, but to me, that's a lot of money. So you're a big timer over there. But
No. Hey, I got two kids in private school, man. I need the deal.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, so $72 million to the company. And if you notice on the front cover of the book, the coin at the bottom, it has the number 7 million. And so that represents his commission he would get. He would get $7 million payout for making the sale. But Damon, as you read about, the only problem is that to move forward with the sale, him and his team would have to turn a blind eye to some massive integrity issues. And so the pinnacle of the book is—
Don't give it away, Alex.
I'm going to keep them all on the edge of their seat. The pinnacle is, does he make the sale, make all this money, right off into the sunset, or does he do the right thing? And like you said, Damon, we're not going to tell them. They have to buy the book, of course. But it's those principles about integrity that his mentor teach him that's what I go share about when I go to organizations and do team building things is, look, these are the principles that actually allow you to achieve long-term success. Not just one win, but like, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of doing things the right way and how that can add up. And Damon, I mean, I think you and what you've built in your business is an example of that. You've continually showed up, you do the right thing, and now you're helping a lot of people, which is really cool.
My first experience really with integrity when it came to leadership was when I was at Pepperdine, my baseball coach, Alex, he only had two rules. And number one was show up on time. And the second rule was do the right thing all the time. And so players would say, well, what do you mean, coach? What do you mean? And he said, you know what it means to do the right thing. When nobody's looking, you know, I know you talked about this in your book, when nobody's looking, you still need to do the right thing. And I think that it's something that always stuck with me. And I really enjoyed a lot of your book, especially when it talked about if you're not doing the right thing, it's hard to keep track of everything. It takes a lot of energy. And so, Alex, but even with all that being said, many leaders struggle with integrity, especially under pressure. Share with us an example, either for yourself or with somebody else in a situation like that.
That's a great question. And that's a great point because no one's perfect. I'm not, you're not, no one is. But one thing that I would say that is, I think, given rocket fuel to my career is mentorship. Finding people who I want to be someday, guys like John Gordon and getting around those people. Another example is literally one of my neighbors. He's about a block down from our house. He's 72 years old, and he's just extremely wise. His name is Larry. And so every Friday morning, 5 a.m., because here's the thing, we're so busy, it's like, okay, during the day, something's going to come up that we'll have to cancel. But at least, I don't know about you, Damon, but I don't get any invited to any like social gatherings at 5 a.m. So, you know, that
not
time
anymore.
So that time is usually pretty open for me. So Friday mornings, me and Larry and another friend who we call on the phone, we're talking about life. He's asking us questions, and it's especially like, it's really business coaching, but it's spiritual coaching all in one. And so that's our recommendation, because if you look at any top athlete, they have a nutrition coach, they have a position coach, they have a coordinator, they have a head coach. And so often in business, we think, oh, I'm just going to build this business, I'm going to do it on my own. You need to have people that are not only going to tell you that you're wrong, but even sometimes more importantly, they're going to encourage you. Because if you know, Damon, I mean, some ways building a business feels like war some days, where it's like you have a good day. I heard Elon Musk say building a business, owning a business is like eating glass. You know, it's like every day at, you know, when you build a business, you're then working with all the big issues that get to you eventually that you have to deal with. And so I think having someone who's older, who's wiser, who has more gray hairs than I do, I'm starting to get a few of them. I just turned 32. He has a lot more gray hairs than I do. That has been huge, because we're not perfect, to your point. And under pressure, we will make decisions. But here's what's cool. Him being like a spiritual coach, I actually bring in business, not only ideas, but just situations, and get his perspective. And so I've kind of referred to it as, you know, what he calls the business advantage, because it really is an advantage in business when you have someone who, he doesn't really have a horse in the race. He doesn't ultimately care on some of the decisions I make, but he cares about me. And so he's willing to invest in me. And that would be my encouragement for anyone, whether you own your own business or you're an employee, it doesn't matter. You need to have someone who's older, wiser, who you're constantly just in communication with, who you can bounce ideas and just be encouraged by. And so that would be my advice, man, is just find that person. They don't have to be an expert. They don't have to be a whatever, someone famous, but just find someone and that you look up to, that you can trust. And I think that's really helped me in my career.
What is a situation in your own life where maybe you were you know, kind of make a decision around integrity? Like, hey, this is the right thing to do, but maybe you thought about maybe not making the right decision, but you ended up going for it.
Yeah, it's a great question. Because I feel like in some ways we're faced with integrity situations every day almost. I one of my first ever speaking engagements was in 2018, and I remember the CEO of this car dealership. He said, Alex, what's more important, modeling integrity or talking about it? And I paused for 1 second and I said, both. That's the only way I knew how to answer it, because it's like you have some people who just talk about it, but then everyone behind his back is going, well, he doesn't really live that. And then over here, it's not just enough to talk about it, never model it. And so I think something I can think of specifically, I guess, is just, like there's been times when I've done speaking engagements where I've gotten like overpaid or and so in that moment, you're like, wow, if I kept this organization paying me, they would never know. But it's those moments of just sending the email and saying, hey, I think you overpaid me, or hey, you know, where now I can rest easy at night. Because to your point earlier, I tell people all the time, it's like, even like take a white lie, for example, you think, oh, this won't affect me, this doesn't affect anyone else. Well, it's almost like, imagine, I don't know if you can, Damon, can you juggle?
Kind of, not really, I'm not good.
Okay, so I'm pretty decent. I'm not trying to brag here, but I'm pretty good. So if I had them with me, I would show you. But imagine, you know, a tennis ball is like just one white lie, and I start throwing that tennis ball up, right? And it's really easy to maintain, right? But then I add two, and this is a demonstration I do when I speak to, you know, companies or teams. Then I get to three, and I can keep going. I go under my legs, go around my back, do all this stuff.
You are good.
But I say, this is what happens when you, to your point earlier, you have to keep track of all these things. I grab four, and I can juggle four for about 5-10 seconds. But then after that, what happens? It all comes crashing down. And I think that right there is the core of the message that I have for business leaders is, look, you might have gotten away with something here, something over there. You told this person's, but eventually, to your point, it catches up to you, or it's just stressful. Like, who, why give yourself the stress of like, well, I lied to this person, so now I have to remember what I told them. It's like, if you just live in a way that you're like open and you're transparent, and again, no one's perfect, but if you just live in a way that you, your yeses are yeses, your noes are your noes, and you're just, you're transparent and congruent in what you do, I think it's a little easier. I think it's more of a simple lifestyle, you know. Maybe it doesn't sound as good when you're out at some event and someone's like, oh, tell me about this. And in that moment, it's really easy. You're like, man, I could make myself sound better right now. We're probably all guilty of that in little ways. But it's like, you know what? I would encourage my encouragement to people is like, just next time you get in that conversation, just see what how it goes when you kind of just don't make yourself sound as good. And I think that's just a practice of humility, and not to talk bad about yourself, but it's just like, I don't want to try to even position myself to act like I'm someone who I'm not, because it's like, yeah, then I have, yeah. So
it is a good answer. And what you're saying is, you got to find a way to be authentic and genuine, especially as a leader. And one rule that I've always lived by, Alex, is for my team at Learn It, is don't be penny smart and pound foolish, especially with your customer. If there is a product or, you know, something that they want to purchase from Learn It, and maybe they're going down the wrong direction because it's more expensive, you're not allowed to sell that to them. You need to go with what's best for them and give them the best solution, because you want to build these long-term relationships. And in Alex's book, he talks about, you know, chasing quick wins and how those can undermine long-term success. So Alex, can you share a little bit around how that could be?
Yeah, I think the example you just gave was great. You know, we talk about being a, rather than just a salesperson, you know, being a people rep, you know, rather than a sales rep, being a people rep, or rather than just being a, you know, being a trusted advisor. Because when you're a trusted advisor, that implies that they're probably not just advising you one time, they're advising you multiple times in the future. And so I do think that whether it's I think it's almost like a snowball effect. You hear about Dave Ramsey's debt snowball, right? Where it's like, you pay, if you have a lot of debt in your life, you pay off the smallest debt, you go to the biggest. I think in the same way, integrity issues in leadership can be it can be like a reverse snowball, where like you start maybe, like to your point, doing this quick thing that you think, oh, it won't affect anyone. Like a good example of my life is, maybe this is a good example of like, I used to just like send off emails extremely quickly. Didn't put much thought. I would just kind of, and someone finally told me, hey, the way it came off is I didn't mean it like that, but I didn't take the time to be like, all right, I'm going to make sure I have, you know, good grammar in this email, and I'm going to take the, right. And that's a small example, but I think it can also snowball and get bigger and bigger. The more you are just chasing those quick, short-term minded things, rather than saying, okay, potentially in your scenario, what's the lifetime value of this customer? You know, but also, you know, how do we make sure that this customer is happy with their products from Learn It today, but also 3 years from now, 5 years from now? I think when you have that mentality, it changes the way you sell, because really it's not as much sales. It's more helping someone solve a problem. It's saying, okay, what's your problem that you're, you know, having as an organization, as a team? Well, hey, let me show you this solution that we've done for this other team over here. This is what they've seen happen. And they're going, boom, well, I want that. What you just said, I want that. And I think that it takes the pressure off sales. You're not really having to sell someone. You're just saying, hey, what's your problem? Let's find a solution. That, and if it's not us, that's great. It takes the stress away from being like, oh, we got to close this client. It's like, no, if it's not a good fit, they'll go somewhere else. We'll find a different client. And I think that's just the mentality you have to have in sales.
If you do right by your customer, Alex, they're going to come back to you when you are the right fit for them. So maybe even connect them with somebody else. And it all comes down to trust, really. And in Alex's book, he talks a lot about, what does it mean to be a fully integrated leader? And how does that impact the trust that you're able to build with your team?
You know, I heard Warren Buffett, owns 66 different companies, one of the richest people. And he talks about trust. He said, trust is like the air that we breathe. When it's, you know, present, you don't even really notice it. You just breathe, right? But when it's absent of trust, you can't breathe. It's suffocating. It's unbearable. And it's the same thing with our teams, with our people that we interact with. When you are on a team with people that you don't trust them, they can't trust you, you're having to look behind your back to see if they're, you know, it does not work out well. We can all of us listening here could share examples of being on a team, whether it's a sports team or in business, where you're like, man, this does not feel good. This does not feel right. This is not productive. And I think the trust piece is so often overlooked. People don't think like, wow, I want to take the time. I'm going to take the extra effort to make sure that I do build the trust with this person, rather than just like this quick sale of here, sign here, sign here. Like, honestly, quick example of this, we for our company Streamline Books, we help people write and publish their book. We go to these different trade shows and conferences, right? And there are other people in the industry that they will do things. And again, I'm not saying this is wrong, but one strategy I've seen them do is they will, it's a very high pressure sales. Hey, like sign here or this deal goes away. Here's the credit card. Here's how you swipe it.
Right.
And so our approach is more like, hey, here's what we do. Go home, talk with your spouse about it, pray about it, think about it, ask us, we'll connect you with a few of our past clients, take your time. Guess what? If you want to take a week or 10 years, hopefully we're still here. So you come back to us when you're ready. I'm not saying either of those approaches are right or wrong. I'm just saying the one that we feel better about is what we choose to do, rather than, you know, some of the feedback we've heard from prospective clients that have gone through those other sales processes. They're going, well, they told me not to talk with my spouse. They told me that if I really believed in the product, I should just do it and sign right now. That's a small example, but I think, for Streamline Books, me and my co-founder, that's one of our goals, is how do we, redemptively sell in a way that's like, hey, we believe in our product. We believe how it can really impact your life in a positive way. But we ultimately want the process. We tell people we want it to be a blessing, not a burden. And that means financially, that means mentally. Like, you should not, using the book example, don't go through our book writing process if you don't want to write a book. Yeah, like, or if you have other stuff going on in life where you're just not interested at this time, that's great. We don't want to talk you into that. We want to work with individuals who say, look, I know there's one person out there who's going to be impacted by my message, my book. Like, that's why I'm doing the book. And we say, you're our perfect client because you get it. You understand the impact that it can bring. And Damon, you're an author yourself. The impact it can have, what it opens you up to. But that's just one example of, rather than being fast, let's sign here, and then they're burned in the process, how can we say, hey, we want to do this in a way that is benefit to all in the process.
And Alex, to piggyback on that, people want to work at an organization that's like that, especially the younger generations. So for leaders out there who maybe are having a trust issue, or maybe their people don't feel like they have their backs, or things just aren't going the way they want them to go, what's some practical advice? What's one step that a leader could do right now to start learning how to lead, to build better trust and integrity?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one thing that I recommend for leaders is you need to get a pulse of the culture of your people, because you might think you know it, but probably don't in some ways. And so what I recommend is, just one practical way, outside of doing team building, getting to know people outside of work, which is massively important, especially with so many companies being remote today, is, anonymous surveys, or even if it's not anonymous, just surveys done by the team to say, hey, how would you rank as a leadership team we're doing? What are your thoughts here? Like, you're not going to be in any way affected by your answers here. So that's why I think if that's a concern, you could do it anonymously. But it's really getting the pace of the culture to say, okay, what are people actually thinking? To understand where we're at, we kind of have to have a baseline of like, what are our own people think here? And so I think surveys, I don't know if you've ever done anything like that or if what you suggest, but I think that's something like that is a place to start to say like, where are we at? How do we get better?
I think that's great advice. And as we wrap up here, I do have, I think, a question that's on a lot of people's mind right now is, we just had the election and there's people who are super happy and people who are, very distraught. What's one piece of advice that you could recommend to listeners and leaders out there that could help, get both parties engaged together so that we can continue to work better together moving forward as an organization?
In this culture we're in now, it's so, every election is like this, but especially this one has been so, in many ways divisive, in many ways polarizing. But as you think through, okay, in my personal life, how many things are truly massively impacted by an election? I think when you think about it like that, I think for the people that are not happy, maybe that makes it a little better. And for the people that are really happy, maybe it calms them down a little bit. I don't know. I think it's so easy for us to be just consumed with what's happening, the news, all the different things. And I think so much of leadership and where you're going comes down to what are you dialed into? What are you listening to? So if you're listening to news media, which, you know, I think we all have our own views of certain media companies and some of the things they put out there. It's like, if that's all you're listening to, I think it'd be pretty tough to be a positive person. I think it would be pretty tough to go out and hit goals that you want to achieve. And so I think that's my encouragement. I'm not saying people shouldn't be informed. I'm not saying don't go vote or whatever you want to do. I'm just saying, I think as a leader, you have to look at, okay, there's people that I lead that I need to steward well as far as in my leadership. And am I listening to things? Am I putting things on my mind that are uplifting, that are positive? Because at the end of the day, you know, the great thing about our government is that we live in a free society. We live in a where the government doesn't play a large role in some of the things that we get to do. And so I think just the freedoms that we have in America is amazing. And I would just say, be careful, you know, look at your screen time. How many hours have you been on your phone aimlessly looking? It's things like that that I think of in times like this where people get so into it. This is a good example. I asked my buddy the other day, we were just catching up, and I'm like, oh man, like it's pretty crazy out there right now, huh? Just everyone's reaction and all that. And he goes, oh really? Is it? I haven't seen. And I was like, I'm like, man, that's what I love about you. He's not informed. He's just focused on other things. And I think that's how I want to be as well. I don't want to just be so glued into whatever news channel that I can't just still go make an impact and still do things that I'm called to do. So that would be my encouragement. Maybe a little less screen time, a little more introspection and thinking about what you want to do to make an impact.
I think that's wonderful advice. And I got one more question before we wrap up here. You know, you do about 40 speeches a year. You have access to amazing people like John Gordon, who I've actually seen speak before. He's awesome.
Oh, cool.
Well, yeah, I saw him at a sales conference last year. Awesome. What's one piece of advice you want to leave our listeners with, leaders out there?
Yeah, we had some really good discussion, man, on this podcast. You really teed it up well. I appreciate your question. But I would say, I think it goes back to looking ahead into the future in your own life. Again, many people won't take the time to do this, but this is my encouragement. Take the time to say, okay, where am I realistically at currently when it relates to your goals, your job, your family, you relate all the different aspects of your life, and start, you know, maybe get in a routine of a quarterly check-in with yourself. Put it on your Google Calendar. Every quarter, you're going to have these, you know, goals that you create for yourself on your wall. Mine are literally taped here to the right of where I'm standing. And it's like every quarter, can you just touch base on those? How am I doing? You know, how am I doing when I think about who I want to become, where I want to go? What are you doing to get those in front of you? What are you doing to, because the reality is so many times we do the things that are urgent, but are not important. And so for me, like for the first time, I've started, you know, having a virtual assistant help me with some of my different things. And that's really opened my mind to say, wow, I don't maybe need to be the one sending the invoice. There's someone else that is way better at doing it and that enjoys doing it. And again, I just think it comes to, what are the things that you are uniquely gifted to do? And how do you double down on those things so that when you look up 10, you know, my last word would be this, actually what John Gordon told me. When I first started as a speaker and as an author, it was really tempting for me to look at what he's built, his following, his platform, and get discouraged because I'm like, man, he's done so many amazing things. Like, I'll never get to do those things. And as we talked about it, he just gave me a complete opposite encouragement of what I was thinking. But he also said, Alex, put your head down for 10 years, for a decade, work hard, do the right thing, add value. He's like, then in 10 years, you'll look up and you'll be, in air quotes, he said, an overnight success. And I think that's what a lot of our culture forgets. They look on social media and they say, oh, wow, must be nice. But they neglect to just put in the work. And I think that would be my message, is put in the work, even introspectively in your own life, to say, where do I want to go? Where am I headed? Am I on track? Do I need a coach? Do I need a business coach? Do I need a spiritual coach? Who do I need in my corner that when I am discouraged, when I do go through a tough decision, I have people that are smarter than me, that are knowledgeable, that are wise, that I can say, hey, will you help me get over this hurdle, this obstacle in my life? And man, that would be my encouragement.
Well, Alex, I think you're wise beyond your years of 31. I think this was a fantastic conversation. You shared with us your great story of being resilient and humble at Missouri. And we talked a lot about the importance of mentors, hard work, and being your authentic self. And of course, you know, how integrity plays into the world when it comes to leadership, not just leadership, but all aspects of your life, you know, as an integrated person. So where can our listeners connect with you at?
Yeah, thanks, Damon. AlexSpeaking.com is my website. It's for having me come speak to your team, your organization. And then WriteMyBooks.com. If there's anyone listening that's going, hey, you know what? I need to share my story. And Damon, I'll even say this. I will extend a Damon discount.
For like anyone
who reaches out, we'll make sure we help them share their story. But AlexSpeaking.com and then WriteMyBooks.com.
Listeners out there, what I'd like you to do is for somebody who could benefit from this, text it to them. Take this episode and go out and text it to them. And until next time, everybody, I want you to continue to stay curious and keep learning. Have a good day.